Hello and welcome to episode 15 of Engaging Internal Comms. This is the show for employee engagers and internal communicators who like to keep up to date with all that is new in our wonderful profession. My name's Craig Smith from The Big Picture People. If you've not listened to the previous 14 episodes of the show, you can catch up with them on our website, which is engagingic.com, or via your favourite podcast platform, iTunes, or anything similar to that that you listen to your podcasts on. Next week, we've got a fantastic interview with someone who's a real thought leader, Jamie Mustard, who is the author of The Iconist, which is a book I've read recently, which I found fantastically interesting. Jamie's whole idea, his big idea, is all about how we stand out from the crowd and how we stand out from the background noise, which I think for any internal communicator or anyone in any organization at the minute will appreciate the challenges of actually being heard against the background of all of the other communications and information that people are trying to assimilate. And Jamie's got some really interesting ideas on that. A fantastic interview with a really inspiring interviewee. So I'm really looking forward to putting that one out next week. The website that I mentioned earlier, engagingic.com, we have a mailing list which you can sign up to, where we will send you information about the show, and we will send you information about next week's show, and we'll let you know when every episode is released on the day it's released. You can also give us some feedback there, which we'd love to hear. We're now starting getting towards the end of season one, probably about another three episodes to go in season one, and then we'll have a short break, and then we're going to go into season two. And season two, we'll probably be going to be changing the format slightly, still be having interviews, but we're probably going to be mixing it up and also maybe drilling into some topics in a bit more detail, maybe two or three consecutive shows looking at one particular topic. So if there's anything that you'd really like us to cover, and if you'd like to be interviewed yourself as well, we're always looking for potential guests for the show who've got something interesting to tell our audience and some ideas that they'd like to share. So please get in touch with us again via the website, engagingic.com. You can join our website, our Facebook group as well via the website, which is a private group. If you can let us know which episode you heard me mentioning on, it just helps us to verify that you're a legitimate person wanting to join our group for legitimate reasons and not someone who's going to self-promote themselves on there. So that would be fantastic. And finally, the thing I ask every week, but is really important, if you could subscribe to the show via your podcast platform, it really, really does help us with our visibility, helps other people who are looking for podcasts or episodes in this sort of space around internal comms, employee engagement. It really helps to help for them to find us, and helps us to show up in the rankings higher up. So please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Anyway, so on to today's interview. Okay, so for today's interview, I'm going to be speaking to Tracy Brower. And Tracy's going to be telling us all about the interesting work that she's doing around bringing our workplaces to life and the future of the workplace. Tracy is a principal at Steelcase, and we'll find all about Steelcase in a moment when we speak to Tracy. And they're an organization that's leading the way in terms of architecture, furniture, and technology products in terms of designing workplaces that allow people to deliver their full potential. Tracy is a contributing writer at Forbes.com and Fast Company, and she's also the author of Bring Work to Life by Bringing Life to Work, a Leader's Guide for Organizations. Tracy's a PhD, and she has a career background that includes working at organizations like Mars. So hello, Tracy, how are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me, Craig.
It's an absolute pleasure. And you are in the Michigan area of the United States. So just to help our listeners in Europe, which part, if we were sort of thinking US geography, whereabouts Michigan and Grand Rapids, greater Grand Rapids, where would that be on a kind of map of the US?
Yeah, so we are kind of north central. We are the state that looks like a mitten, and we're surrounded on three sides by water.
Wow. Excellent. Oh, that's, yeah. And so nearest sort of big cities that we would probably recognize?
Yeah, we're probably about equal distant from Detroit and Chicago.
Okay, fantastic. And I did a kind of a not a very good job of introducing Steelcase. I'm sure you can do a much better job than me. Well, tell us a little bit about Steelcase and what Steelcase does. I think it's a really interesting story.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm not totally objective. I adore Steelcase. I think it's an amazing company, which is what every employee should say, right? But Steelcase was founded in 1912. We are global and the largest furniture manufacturer in the world. Revenues are about $3.4 billion. We've got about 12,000 employees, and we do business through dealerships and dealer partners. So we've got about 800 dealers worldwide.
Okay. And again, specifically, so I know it's got quite a broad portfolio of services. In a nutshell, what sort of thing does the organization, what sort of services, products does it offer to your clients? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like you said, it's really about furniture and about creating great work experiences and great workplaces. In addition to furniture, which is kind of core competence, we also have amazing technology products and architectural products, things like that.
Wonderful. Excellent. And I think what really grabbed my attention, Tracy, and why I really wanted to reach out to you, because it was a fantastic opportunity to be able to speak to you today, was the you wrote it. I don't use the word lightly. What I thought was a fantastic, amazing article on Forbes.com, which was titled "Why the Office Simply Cannot Go Away: The Compelling Case for the Workplace." And I think we're recording this, you know, well, not post-pandemic. It's kind of, we're still in the midst of it, in the summer fall of 2020. I'm really interested about that article, and Tracy, and you, again, I'm sure you can do a better job of summarizing the essence of what that article was about, and the, you know, the key lessons or the key sort of points that you were making in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you for the kudos on the article. I just, you know, I think it's so interesting. We've all been kind of pushed home to work, whether we wanted to be or not. And then we started seeing some press about, well, maybe we don't ever have to go back to the office. Maybe we can be just as effective from home. And I looked around, and after all my years researching work and workers and workplace, I just really see that the workplace has something very, very important to offer us. And I think it has to do with, you know, like, a place that can help foster innovation, a place that is critical for our humanity, a place that's critical for talent and engagement and well-being and organizational culture. And so the article really looks at what are some of those compelling reasons that the office can't go away. We will surely have an expanded ecosystem of places. We will probably all work from home more than we ever imagined pre-pandemic, but the office is still a critical part of that holistic experience. So I that was what motivated me to write the article, is, gosh, how can we really encapsulate all the reasons that the office can't go away and all the reasons it's critical to us?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, and that, I think that's why it really resonated for me. And I think you're right. I think, you know, I've worked from home. I'd probably be one of the strangest people to advocate a workplace environment. I've worked at home for 15 years, but when I work with my clients, I can really see the difference that an office makes to them. And the analogy I've been using with some of my clients is, it's a little bit like, yeah, you can live indoors for, you know, a few months, but at some point the lack of vitamin D is going to start to affect your health. And I think in the early days of the lockdown, there were a lot of people who were kind of, you know, advocating that this was now the new world, you know, everybody was going to be working from home. But it was more the kind of chronic effects of desocialization that I think took a while for people to start to sink in. And I think what you touched upon in the article was that whole idea that, you know, there are so many things that we can't do when we're working in an isolated, you know, we can do great things. Yeah, we don't have to commute, which is wonderful. We can sometimes probably get a better balance between our work in our life because we're not spending so much dead time commuting, but we miss so much. And I think, you know, the quote that I really kind of captured my attention is that, you know, we're better when the office is part of a holistic work experience. In addition to working from home, the workplace has a place in our businesses, our society, our communities, and our lives, a place that we must maintain. So I'd really like to explore that thought, those ideas from that article, and particularly that quote. So what is it that you feel that some of the key essences of what we get from working in a collaborative office workspace that we just can't get when we're working through, you know, sort of technology like the technology we're using here to talk to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, I love your comments that we can do so much work from home and technology can serve us really, really effectively, but we can't do everything effectively. And I like to say, you know, we can shop from home, we can exercise at home, we can eat at home, we can work at home, but just because we can doesn't mean we should. And we crave variety and we crave more stimulation. If you look kind of neurologically, we really want more of that stimulation. And work is a really important place for us because we also thrive on face-to-face relationships. Our humanity really depends on coming together with other people. And so the office is fundamentally social. Work is fundamentally social. And whether you're an introvert or an extrovert, everyone needs some time alone and some time together. And so the workplace is a place where we really, really come together. We form communities. We understand ourselves in community with others. We feel like we're making a contribution and have a greater purpose when we are in community with others. And so that is part of the reason that the office is so important. We need that variety. We need that community. And that's why in the quote, I really talk about, it's not just critical for businesses or critical for business outcomes. It's critical for us as people. It's critical for the communities, not just within the workplace, but outside of the workplace in terms of the context. I guess the other thing I would say, Craig, and you referenced this, is just about work life. You know, like it's really funny because for so long, the work life literature has talked about how do we leave work at work? How do we have more distance? How do we save time for personal and protect the personal? And now we're hearing this response from people saying, how do I get a little more distance from home? I'd really like a little more boundary away from home. And essentially, we need both. And it's really healthy to integrate and to incorporate work and life, depending on what your personal right answer is. But it's also really healthy to have that boundary and that opportunity to kind of have each of those and have each of those in a distinct way.
Yeah, absolutely. It was interesting what you said there, because you said about the distinction between introverts and extroverts, and I think it's partly from a lack of I don't want to, you know, say this disparagingly, but I think sometimes people don't really understand there's a social definition of introversion and extroversion, which is sometimes not aligned necessarily with that. But I think, you know, the point that you made there, which I mean I've seen people who I would describe as fairly clear extroverts who've really been struggling with the whole situation, but also people who I would describe as more, you know, introverted. They probably are more comfortable with their own company, and probably like, you know, smaller groups gathering. But even so, I think they've struggled with the whole isolation and lockdown. And they're typically people you would think would thrive in that sort of situation. So I, again, just sort of reiterating that point, it's not about, you know, some people prefer working in an isolated way. I think what you've said there is that actually we all need that opportunity to interact and share and have that sort of social space as well, regardless of whether that's with lots of people on a superficial basis, but on a more kind of more people and more often versus just smaller sort of tighter relationships. I think regardless of that, we need those sort of workspaces where we can do that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And I think it's all about proportion, right? Like an introvert versus an extrovert might want different proportions of time alone or together, small groups, large groups, but we all need both. In fact, it's really interesting. I just wrote an article that I released Sunday night about, you know, like we're home alone. What about the people who live alone, and how are you quarantined alone without being lonely? And there was a brilliant piece of input I got from someone, and she was saying, you know, one of the things that I do is I work really hard. I throw myself into my work. And one of the things that I get back from that is relationships and feeling connected to others, not a giant group of others, but really feeling connected in a meaningful way. And I am missing that. I'm not getting as much of that back from my work experience. And so I think that there's this really interesting interesting way that we get rewarded and that we have a level of reciprocity in terms of our work kind of paying us back in terms of our relationships with colleagues and feeling rewarded for that. And I think that as we think about like kind of individual and team and organizational levels, you may have a job where you work super, super independently. Maybe you're a, you know, graphic designer or writer and you just legitimately don't need as much time collaborating. But when teams are working together, that intra-team relationship is so critical, really that line of sight and understanding how my work impacts others. And organizations, one of the main things that organizations do is they help the inter-team relationships. They look at teams and how teams interact together in order to serve customers. And so place has a role in all three of those, individual and team and organizational, and maybe a greater and greater role at each of those points on a continuum. So yeah, I think our individual work styles are so relevant. Our ways of really understanding how we make a contribution to work are super relevant and super personal, but the workplace has a role in any of those.
Yeah, yeah. So playing devil's advocate then, and I am literally playing devil's advocate here from my own point of view. But in terms of what I've heard people saying is that, you know, we've now got we've got Slack, we've got Trello, we've got Microsoft Teams, we've got these collaborative workspaces where we can work on shared documents. You know, we can jump onto a Zoom call and we can have a team meeting. So superficially, all you know, why would we need an office space? What is it that what's that sort of secret sauce, the magic stuff that the office place offers that we can't now kind of simulate through an online environment? Because I think that's still, for a lot of people, is still a kind of underlying perception, which is I genuinely think some people still think that you could do everything now still virtually. I think some people have had that epiphany already. But what would you say? What is that secret magic thing that just cannot be replicated in a purely digital online relationship within a team?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, I think it's so many things. And I think one of the things we're seeing is that mental health issues are increasing. The longer people work from home, the more they feel socially isolated. There's a study recently that SHRM did, Society for Human Resource Management, which said that companies are struggling. 64% of companies are struggling with morale. People are hitting a wall in terms of working from home. And one of the things that is causing that is just the fatigue of always being online and always relying on technology to connect. That is true because it's incredibly intense. We get a lot of time compression as well. Like when everything takes place in one place, kind of in our home office, focused on our screen, we actually don't remember as well and don't cement our learning as well. I think the other thing is that we can struggle with some cognitive dissonance. As humans, our instinct is to connect and to feel really in sync with others. This gets a little woo-woo, but there's a process neurologically called limbic resonance, where you want to sync up with the people around you. You tend to do like echoing of body language, and you are reading micro expressions, and you're gaining lots of information from nonverbal sources. And when you're all on camera, you can't do that as effectively. And so that causes a level of fatigue in terms of our minds and brains and how we're interacting together. So that can be very challenging. And so I think the other thing that's really critical is thinking about what the office gives us in terms of the organizational culture. So the workplace and the physical environment sends such cues about a company's culture. The place is kind of the body language of culture. We understand like how much does the organization value collaboration? How do we work together? How do we show up together? How much does the organization value our privacy or our opportunity to rejuvenate? In what ways is the organization supporting our well-being? All of those cues are such an important part of our overall experience. And when we're away from the office, we don't get those same cues. And so we can't be as effective in terms of taking cues from the physical environment. we also can't be as effective as taking cues from those of us, people around us. So you can't kind of look up and run into your leader who's walking through your space, or kind of look up and get a sense for what's happening from your colleagues. And that causes not only fatigue, but it causes us to potentially be less effective because we're just not as plugged into the context. We have to work a lot harder to be plugged into the context.
Yeah, I totally agree with you on that. I mean, I think the whole, the sort of sense of belonging that you don't have. I mean, I know this from my own experience of, one of the things I struggled and wrestled with for the first couple of years of working from home was that sort of sense of not really, didn't feel as, because it was my own company, I guess, to a certain extent, but was a sort of sense that you'd think it was ironic given the fact that it did belong to me. But it was that sort of sense of being in a space where we had something in common with each other. And I think that's quite difficult to simulate in an online environment. You can have, Coffee Friday or whatever, or, your kind of team get togethers, that sort of thing. But, I think that sort of shared experience of being in the same place and that kind of whole ambience of the workplace is really,
Can I build on that, Craig? Yes. I think that point is really a big deal. Like, sociologically speaking, there's something called the bandwagon effect. And it's the idea that when we're together with groups, we tend to draw energy from the group. The other thing that we know from studies by Harvard is that one of the key things that makes an organization really successful is a common sense of purpose. And so there's something about being together in a place with a common sense of purpose. I can look across the work cafe and see somebody that I may not even work closely with, maybe I don't even know them, but we're showing up together in the same place and we are there for an overall common purpose. So we gain energy from each other. We gain that sense of common purpose. My friend Ben says, and I love this, he says, you can't hear the birds chirping. Isn't that a lovely analogy? I just think, in the disaster movies, right? You know, there's like a bomb that's going to be dropped, or a typhoon that's going to be hitting, or some terrible thing that's happening. And all of a sudden everything gets silent in the movie and you can't hear the birds chirping. You can't hear the sounds of wildlife. We are herd animals and tribe animals, and we need to tune in. And so there's something about hearing the birds chirping, right? You run into somebody in the elevator lobby, or you run into somebody at the coffee bar, and you kind of hear what's going on, and you can stay in touch. And that gives us that sense of belonging that you're talking about. So that sense of energy, that sense of belonging is definitely rooted in place and our experience with each other.
Definitely. Yeah. I mean, part of the way we work with our clients is, I guess what you would say, using that metaphor that you've just used there, is we try and kind of create those campfire conversations where, okay, they're not sat around a fire, but they're sat around something that is a shared, something they're interested in and passionate about, that is at the center of that sort of circle or that square, if they're sat around a square table, which is the conversation piece, which they all kind of share some interest in. And we've really, really, really struggled with this because, for us to sort of step out of that type of experience and to put that into a digital world is just really, really, really difficult because we're not sat in a circle. We're sat kind of linear way looking at a piece of perspex. And it just doesn't, to try and create that kind of magic is really difficult. And I think the intensity of staring into a camera and feeling as though everybody's staring back at me, and this wall of faces is just really difficult. And I'm a great believer in the power of the circle. I don't know whether you're familiar with open space technology, the whole idea of getting people into a circle, because the circle is the most inclusive way of having a big group of people to work with each other. And I know that's not always physically possible in a workspace, but I think that whole kind of metaphor is really difficult to create in an online, non-physical environment.
Yeah, totally agree.
Yes. Sorry. I, So, I mean, you've touched upon this already, but I think there's been an element of desocialization. The whole kind of working in an isolated way has had a big impact on social interaction. I think when we spoke before the interview a few weeks ago, we talked about this idea of, you know, kind of people's social immune systems have been and physical immune systems may even have been compromised when we do get everything. But ironically, you know, when we do get back together, we're probably all going to get hopefully not COVID, but colds and coughs, because we've been kind of out of this small bubble everywhere. I mean, what do you think are some of the other, you know, I don't want to be negative, but some of the other collateral damage elements of this that the organizations need to be starting to think about now, not just the, you know, immediate let's get people back or whatever their strategy is and rebuild the balance sheet and the business, but what are some of the social collateral damage that we need to be thinking about, do you think?
Oh, goodness. You know, it's really pretty far ranging. Like you said, we don't want to be pessimistic. We know we're going to get through this and we're going to come out on the other side. But in the moment, it's really hard. I mean, I think engagement is something that's suffering, right? We see brain drain. People are more likely to have a side hustle when they're working from home. The more they have a side hustle, the more likely they are to go off and do that full time instead. People are more likely to be multitasking, so they're not as engaged. I think we're moving less, which makes us less physically healthy, but we also know that movement is correlated statistically with memory that is cemented. So you literally don't learn as much or remember as much when you're not moving. I think the other thing that's really interesting to think about is just the impact of uncertainty and a perception of threat or danger. So like a lot of our choices have been taken away and we feel a sense of insecurity. I mean, think about the Maslow hierarchy that we all learned about in middle school or high school, right? Like we've spent professional energy worrying about if people have a sense of belonging and if they feel valued and if they have a sense of self-actualization, which are actually absolutely the right things to be focused on. But a lot of people have been kind of bumped right back down to the bottom of that Maslow hierarchy, and they're worried about physiological security and basic safety and security that we haven't normally had on our radar screens as recently. And so when we are closer to the bottom of that Maslow hierarchy, you know, we may be closed in, we may be in a protective mode, and we just can't be as creative. We can't bring our best. We can't kind of be in this opening mode or this mode of really tapping into our fullest potential when we're buckling down, battening down the hatches in kind of a self-protective mode in terms of that danger or threat. So I think it's just an interesting way of thinking about not just about what is our experience and how is that shaping things like movement and memory and engagement, but then also what is our experience of fear or danger or threat and how does that potentially limit us in terms of our thinking?
Yeah. No, I it's a really interesting way of looking at it, because I mean, I've been, you know, again, it's an old model, but it has resonance, because it is enduring, is you know, the whole idea with Maslow around this. How do you get people to self-actualize when, you know, maybe that the social middle tier has been disrupted severely as well, you know, as we've just been talking about in earlier, you know, that you want people to perform high performance, you know, feel a great deal of job satisfaction, but they've got a big gap in that sort of social end. But I mean, as you say, it's more fundamental than that. It's the sort of, you know, security and safety needs as well that have been massively affected by all of this as well. I mean, just moving forward then, Tracy, what do you, you know, what is your, I think you acknowledged earlier that, you know, it's unlikely that we're all going to go in a little pile back into a kind of, you know, business as usual, pretend nothing's ever happened. I think that's unlikely. You've alluded to a kind of more hybrid workplace. I mean, from your perspective, what is your kind of view on how the future of the workplace is going to look, acknowledging, you know, some of these are really fundamental issues that you've addressed and talked about earlier, you know, environmental needs that we need to be addressing in the workspace as well?
Yeah, that's the $6 million question right now, right? And I actually think we have this amazing opportunity. Like, I like to say this is the most significant reinvention of work in our experience. At a meta level, it's the most significant reinvention of work in our experience. And we can respond brilliantly. We can come back from the pandemic. We can come back from the coronavirus. We can create work experiences that are really good in response. But I think our bigger opportunity is to reimagine and to go to new places in the work experience that maybe we weren't catalyzed to have done before. Maybe this is a trigger event that helps us be better overall. So I'm just super optimistic about that. And I think something that you said is fundamental to that. We have always talked in this industry about making the workplace a destination, making it a place people want to be. But I think that's even more relevant because now people need to overcome even more barriers to get there. Like, do I feel safe? Do I feel like I need to go? Is it worth my coming in? And so I think we need to make the place a destination. And we need to do that by making the place both safe and compelling. Safety's, I mean, back to kind of the Maslow hierarchy, which is a seminal model, right? The safety is at the bottom of that Maslow hierarchy. How do we make it a place where people feel safe? They feel secure. They feel protected. They feel like they're, you know, their needs are being respected. But then how do we also make it compelling? And I think that we're going to see kind of a rethink of the purposes that the place needs to serve. You know, like in our work, we need to focus, we need to collaborate, we need to socialize, we need to learn, we need to rejuvenate. In the office, may need to prioritize some of those differently. So we may have a more full portfolio, if you will. Some of the work that we will do will be at home. Some of the work will maybe be in hub locations. Some of the work may increasingly be at satellite or spoke locations. And so I think it's going to be about really thinking about the key purposes and priorities for each of those, and really giving people a great sense of choice about where they choose to do the kinds of work that they need to do in different locations. Because that may be quite individual. Like in my home office, I might be able to focus perfectly. In your home office, you may have lots and lots of distraction and you can't focus there. You need to get away from home to focus. And so I think this idea of offering choice will really, really be important, and places that are really interesting and stimulating and welcoming and really do the things that we can't do as well through technology. That may be things like generative work, co-creative work, really the opportunity to build communities. Those are the things that we need to do face-to-face, maybe more than some of the other things. So I think our opportunity is to create places that are even better than they were before, even better than they might have been able to be, because the pandemic can be an accelerant toward great work experiences.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I think it's really interesting because I've been to places. I've visited places. I've visited client offices where, you know, on the surface, it looks like a great place to work. It's really funky. You know, the colors are great. They've got all this sort of like really great artwork on the walls, and yet when you get into the boardroom and you start talking to people, you can tell that's just sort of skin deep. And I think for me, the interesting thing is how. And I think it's exactly what you build on exactly what you've been saying there, which is you've got to have a kind of a purpose, a strategy, and a workplace that are all congruent with each other. You can, you know, if you've got a great culture, but the workplace is dreadful, or if you've got a great workplace, but the culture's dreadful, you know, you've got to get the two. And as you say, I think it's about making sure that workplace absolutely has a defined purpose within that sort of portfolio of where I work and how I work and where I can do my best work as well, and that works for everybody. So it's a really interesting, complex, but fascinating situation I think we find ourselves in.
Yes, so well said. I wrote about that concept in my book, actually, and it's that relationship between expectation and experience. And those need to be in alignment. So depending on what my expectation is, if my experience is way below my expectation, I will be very dissatisfied. If my experience is above my expectation, then I'll tend to be more satisfied. But you need that alignment. And one of the things that we talk about is kind of a work experience model. It's a circular model. At the center is kind of the organizational ambitions, business drivers, priorities. What is the organization really trying to accomplish, right, in terms of purpose? And then at the bottom are the two elements of tools and space. And I like to say that those are necessary but not sufficient. You can have the most amazing space in the world, and if you haven't accounted for other elements, it won't be successful. And so top half of the circle are things like process and culture. And so the takeaway message is that you just really, really have to take a holistic approach, paying attention to culture and process and tools and space to have a successful work experience that then drives people's beliefs, which in turn drives their behaviors, which in turn will drive your results. And so totally on board with you. The workplace needs to be so aligned with the culture and what we're trying to accomplish as an organization. And we need to really, really think holistically about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So just for anyone who's listening, who's thinking, okay, you know, we've got people, we're in a situation, maybe, you know, a lot of people I speak to, I think there's kind of a normal distribution curve of right down, and there's outliers of people who are going to be 100%, everybody's going to be back. And in some cases never been away because they've been, you know, either manufacturing or whatever, or there's people who are saying, you know, that's it, 100% now everybody's working from home. There's absolutely zero point. I think they're outliers. There's the normal distribution curve of organizations in the middle, which is going to be somewhere in between, as we've been saying. Just so if anyone's listening to this and thinking, okay, right, where do I start? What's something we can start thinking about as a team, as a management team, as a leadership team, as a department within the organization? What are some of the things where we can start to make some inroads into making some of this transformational, taking advantage of some of these transformational opportunities that we have in front of us now?
Mm-hmm. Oh boy, that is such a good question. You know, I think it is all about starting with kind of the business and whether the business needs to change and where you need to innovate and where you need to kind of reinvent as kind of those overall objectives and purposes. Then I think it's really, really thinking hard about work process. The best workplaces have always been built around supporting work process, but work processes have changed. And some of our priorities and our focuses of work have changed. So I think secondly, it's really thinking about the work processes and how you need to support those for people. And then thirdly, I think it's really thinking about the culture that you want to build, and then really thinking about the connections to the work experience and thinking about how you manifest that through the work experience. So that idea of kind of envisioning that ideal future, thinking of where you are today with regard to the things that I just mentioned, and then really starting to think about how you're going to close those gaps. Those are the opportunities. And I think it's so much about really ensuring that you've got that really solid interconnection between where the business needs to go, and that may be different than it was 4 months ago, and then how the people can help with that, how you can empower people and enable people toward that, and then how the work experience can in turn empower and enable people in that process.
Yeah. Fantastic. Excellent. Well, that has been absolutely brilliant, Tracy. That's fantastic insights there. I love your, you said it was a bit woo-woo. I really like that idea of limbic resonance. I think that's something that I can definitely relate to. And yeah, we can't hear the birds chirping. I think that's another comment that, yes, it's like these horrible sort of stories of tsunamis and things like that, where, you know, everything goes quiet before there's this sort of, huge shock. So yeah, I did some really kind of strong visualizations there. But no, really, and I think that whole idea around, you know, the future of our workspaces and how that needs to be completely congruent with our, you know, culture, our strategy and all of that. We can't just sort of flip into this hybrid way of working and assume that that's everything, you know, everything fixed now and everybody's going to be fine. I think it's really, really interesting. So, Tracy, I warned you, I warn all of my interviewees, there is something I need to ask you, which is, even people who know you quite well, tell us something that that not a lot of people know about Tracy Brower, please? What's your secret story that you're happy to share with us?
Secret story. I love this. Something that not a lot of people know is I've been skydiving twice. Really, really fun. Our son and I went just a couple of weeks ago for the second time, and we loved it. So now what we want to do is we want to try to go once a year, and we want to try to go in a different location every time we go. And one thing I'll say about it, which has been so cool, is when you are sitting outside, and we did a tandem jump, we aren't jumping by ourselves, but when you're sitting on the outside of that airplane and you're getting ready to jump, you are so afraid. You're more afraid than you've ever been perhaps in your lifetime, and you're terrified of falling. And then you say to yourself, no, wait, that's why I'm here. But then once you fall, it's the most incredible feeling of just like this feeling of falling. But the takeaway message for me that's, I don't know, maybe I'm thinking too deeply about skydiving, but you know, like the fear of falling is a completely different sensation than the actual act of falling. And I don't know, I just think that's kind of cool to think about for our lifetimes, right? Like we want to take risks. We want to stretch. We want to try new things. We want to go in new directions. And sometimes that can be scary and ambiguous and uncertain. But boy, sometimes when you take that step, it's so worth it to have a really, really new experience that you can stretch into. And I got to recommend skydiving. It's a really, really fun thing to do.
I'm enthralled by it as someone who's terrified of heights. It's something that I, you know, has looked out of lots of airplane windows and not felt that sort of same feeling that I do looking over the edge of a balcony on a very tall building. It's a kind of a strange thing. And there's a TV program in the UK we have where it always starts with people jumping out of a helicopter into, you know, and you can see the sheer terror on people's faces, but then the exhilaration when they actually like do it and they land. I guess I've lived my life to those principles as well. I don't know if you're a fan of Harry Potter, but Dumbledore in Harry Potter says that nothing in life worth doing is easy. And I think it's a similar sort of thing, isn't it? That it's the hard things that give us that sort of sense of being alive. So I totally understand what you mean by that. And it's a nice story. So where did you do your skydives, just as a matter of interest?
Oh, we've just done it around here. We did one in Holland, Michigan, and one in Grand Haven, Michigan, but over Lake Michigan, Lake Makatawa. And so you see the lake, and it's just, and these lakes are huge. Like when you're standing on the shore, it looks like an ocean. You can't see across. And so it's just this like beautiful, exhilarating, awe-inspiring kind of experience. Yeah, really cool.
Amazing. That's been fantastic. Tracy, I've got a list of links that we're going to put in the show notes about you and how people can find out about you. You've got a website. You're obviously active on Twitter. We've got your TED Talk, which I didn't mention at the beginning as well, which is very, very worth watching. Your LinkedIn profile, your Forbes article that we referenced, and also we'll put a link to Steelcase as well. Anything else that you'd like us to make a reference to? Because I think all of your ideas and contributions are worth following up on. Anything else you'd like to steer people towards?
No, I don't think so. I think you've got it all there. Thank you. Thank you for steering toward those, and really, really appreciate the dialogue together.
No, absolutely. And if people want to reach out to you via LinkedIn or your Twitter and engage with you and have a conversation with you, you're happy to do that. Yeah.
Yeah, of course. Absolutely. Please do. Please link up through LinkedIn, reach out, message me. My email addresses and all of my handles are super available, and I'm really, really interested in engaging. So reach out, get in touch. I would love it.
What wonderful. Well, I mentioned this in the kind of pre-chat we had before we started recording. I do think this is probably not the last time that we'll hopefully be interviewing you on this podcast, because I think we've got other things that we've not had time to cover today, but I'd like to kind of discuss with you further, because I think it's a really interesting area, particularly personally of massive interest to me, and hopefully to our listeners as well. So I'd really like to thank you very much for your time, and it's the beginning of your day out there, so I wish you have a lovely day, and thank you very much for your time, Tracy.
Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for having me, Craig. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Bye-bye. So thank you for listening to Engaging Internal Comms. Hope you found this episode useful. We'd love to get your feedback and thoughts about the show. So, and also any questions or ideas that you've got for things you'd like us to cover in future episodes. So you can email us at info@thebigpicturepeople.co.uk, or you can get in touch with us via the contact form on our website, which is engagingic.com. Also, you'll be able to sign up for our mailing list there, and we'll send you relevant news about the show, new episodes, and also anything that we think you might be interested in when it comes to internal communications or employee engagement. If you like the show and you haven't already done so, please subscribe to it via your podcast service. And also you can subscribe to it via the links on our podcast page, which again is engagingic.com. If you know anyone else who might be interested in the show, please distribute it to them. Please let them know about it. We want to try and grow a community of people here who are contributing to the show, giving us new ideas for episodes and things that you'd like to cover in future. So thank you very much.